Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Jonah Carey's on Twitter at Jonah Carey. You read his stuff at CBS Sports. You hear him on the Jonah Carey podcast, and you hear him right now. Jonah, what's happening?
I'm great. How are you?
Yeah, we're good. We saw the Cubs offense just kind of go dormant again, and it just seems to be these spates of runs, some of these crooked numbers, or nothing, and this is all happening while Chris Bryant also has gone quiet. He hasn't hit a home run in a month. Is this an issue or not?
Well, Bryant certainly has the skill to turn things around. I mean, you look at what happened early in the season. It was Rizzo who was slumping. So the thought is, if you have the horses and you should be able to get it done, and you look at this team, I would argue that, you know, Addison Russell's decline, you know, that's been a disappointment, but they've been able to make it up with Baez emerging, although he's fallen off a little bit lately, and some other things. So, I mean, this is still a strong ball club, and you go through rough patches over the course of the season, and they, you know, these things happen. So it's tough, because obviously doing it against the Brewers, it exacerbates the situation, because this is the team they're trying to climb over. But you look at all the underlying metrics in the Cubs, you know, it seems to be the best team in the division by run differential, by some of the advanced stats. They're just having some problems, which happens over the course of the season.
Jonah, locally, a lot of conversation's been had about the rotation. Mike Montgomery throwing really well as Yu Darvish is on the DL, and Tyler Chatwood is sort of stopped walking people, but not really stopped walking people. I wonder, you know, what kind of level, what kind of sample size, I guess, do you have to have if you're running a club to move a guy that you've signed for big money like that in the offseason and Tyler Chatwood to a spot other than one of the five guys who takes the ball?
Well, I think the things change a little bit if you are trying to figure out, you know, how to hang in a pennant race. It's a little different if you're in last place. You can run out a guy like that. You know, the issue is basically going to be when Darvish comes back, because I don't know how you bump Mike Montgomery from the rotation. I understand that we're in the modern era. Montgomery has a lot of value as an Andrew Miller type who can give you two innings of relief too. But, I mean, gee, if he's going out every 5 days and allowing one run, you can't find many guys who are doing that ever. And so, granted, he'll regress a little bit, but still, I think it's one of those things that you have to take it seriously. So if and when Darvish comes back not only healthy but effective, yeah, I wouldn't have Chatwood in the rotation. I mean, he's your sixth best starter at this point, so why get cute about it? I mean, he could improve, but who are you bumping out of there? You're not bumping out the other three guys, and you're not, you know, Darvish is Darvish. You paid money for Chatwood. You paid way more for Darvish. And Montgomery, if he keeps pitching like this, will have earned his spot. So, you know, maybe Chatwood can iron it out in the bullpen. Obviously, starters don't have to use their full repertoire in the pen. You could basically become a two-pitch pitcher, and maybe that could help him iron out his command. Maybe Tyler Chatwood is destined to be, you know, the next Jonathan Papelbon or Eric Gagne or Mariano Rivera or Dennis Eckersley, originally starting pitcher, but ultimately does really, really much better in relief.
How do you do that, though? What is the proper mechanism to conduct that experiment or make that transition?
Well, there is none. I think you're playing by ear a little bit. You just have to say to the guy, okay, here's what we're thinking from you. I will say that, you know, again, we go back to that role of the multi-inning reliever. Chatwood is stretched out, right? So you don't need to have him come in firing bullets for seven pitches. You can have him be the guy that if Lester falters in the fifth, he can get you to the seventh or the eighth. I think that there's certainly something to that. And that's not as big an adjustment because, you know, you're giving him multiple innings. All you're doing is really taking the shackles off of a guy and saying, air it out. Don't worry about saving yourself 100 pitches. Don't worry about, oh, I got to set up my changeup, which is my fifth best pitch or whatever. I'm just going to throw what I want to throw. And not for nothing, lest we forget, it is way easier to pitch in the bullpen than it is in, you know, to start, because you have to preserve yourself and you have to have a deeper repertoire. I had a conversation with recently retired Twins closer Glenn Perkins not too long ago. And we were just talking, you know, we're just shooting the breeze a little bit. We were talking about this idea of being a relief pitcher. And I mean, he made his bones that way. He was one of the best closers in the game. He said, oh my God, I mean, it's way easier to do what I do, which is funny to hear somebody admit that. But yeah, you know, you, it's very simple minded to pitch in relief, even two innings in relief compared to six or seven out of the, you know, starting every 5 days.
Conversation yesterday on our afternoon show, Jason Stark was on with the boys, and he's got a little piece talking to Rob Manfred about potential expansion and what this game looks like in 2025. I wonder your thoughts on the idea of a massive realignment, one that shifts the very, you know, the very divisions, the very, you know, 19 games against teams that play, you know, 4 miles away from each other. Are we as close to this as perhaps the commissioner might have us think?
The commissioner likes to float trial balloons. He'll kind of see what happens and then go from there. You know, with the pitch clock, there was resistance, but it wasn't as heavy as you might anticipate. So he said, okay, we're going to roll with this thing, and that was sort of that. So it's kind of, he tries. You know, he's looking for different things. He's not conservative as a commissioner. He wants to improve the game's popularity. So there is that. Radical realignment, we'll see. I mean, personally, I am very much against the division system, because why are you playing certain teams more than other teams? It is inherently unfair. Just like having a interleague schedule where one team plays the Padres and the other team plays whoever, the Nationals, is unfair too. If you really want to do this properly, you probably want to try to have as even a schedule as possible, which means abolish the division. Yes, you expand by two teams. You go to 16 for each league, nice and even. And then you just go from there. And, you know, the top four, whatever, five, make the playoffs, and that's it. The problem comes in a few reasons. Number one is geography. You don't want the Red Sox traveling to Seattle all the time. That's a pain in the butt. You can't really do that. And number two, you know, Red Sox, Yankees, Giants, Dodgers, what have you, Cubs, Cardinals. These things are rivalries that you don't want to disrupt because fans care and revenue matters and all that stuff. So it is a tricky situation. But if we were just doing it by fairness, there would be no divisions. There would be no unbalanced schedule. Everything would be balanced. Everybody would play everybody the same amount of time. And that would be that. Expand by two and roll it up.
How does this fit in the current context of what Manfred is dealing with a bit more acutely? And that is an attendance drop of an eye-opening 6.6% from this date last year and 8.6% overall, as chronicled by Jared Diamond of the Wall Street Journal. Would that, with the changes you discuss, the regionalization, the rivalization, would that help? Do you see this as a problem that he needs to address in large scale?
I think attendance is an issue that's endemic to all sports now, because people have 75-inch TVs and the best craft beer you could possibly imagine and the comfort of home and no $40 parking and no long commute and no dealing with annoying people wherever in the seat next to you. And that's sort of where we're at. And so, you know, a lot of experience still matters to a lot of people, but fewer than ever before. I mean, NFL games that were considered kind of the, you know, the untouchable in sports, so many empty seats on Sundays, you know, in various stadiums. The Redskins, I hate saying that name, Washington, mm-hmm. for the first time, whatever, abolished their season ticket waiting list. They once had 200,000 people on the waiting list, and now that isn't the case, because why would anybody want to go to Landover, Maryland, and spend a seven-hour day in the heat or the cold or whatever, when you could just sit on your couch and have a nice time? It's just as good an experience. So I think that this is a problem that goes beyond baseball, and I got to be honest with you. I'm not sure that anything fixes it. I think that we as humans have changed the way that we view things. And some people still want the live experience, the same way that you don't necessarily buy so-and-so's album. You might go to the concert, though. You know, that's what sports needs to do, if anything, is try to figure out how to crack the code. It's like music, right? That if you don't want to consume the product one way, how can you make the live experience better? But I think this is something that requires radical change. I don't think it's a matter of, oh, we're going to do the pitch clock or whatever. I mean, you need to have, you know, live gambling at every seat. You need to have things that break the construct of what we're talking about. It's got to be a value add to go to the ballpark rather than just drinking a $14 beer that you don't really want.
If you need radical change to make that happen and make fans go to the ballpark, then that's, I would imagine, some of it needs to be dealt with in a CBA with players, right? I mean, whether that's talking about how to change revenue splits or how MLB Advanced Media tends to broadcast this, that, or the other thing. I wonder if we're any closer then to having to negotiate that between players and league.
To some extent, I think that's true. But the bigger thing for me would be that the owners need to put some skin in the game. Like, if you own a team and you want, you know, you have a $1.5 billion valuation, you want to get to $2 billion, you want to raise attendance or whatever, you start Jerry Jonesing it up. You start saying, all right, what can we do to make the experience better for the fan? I own a product. I own a business. I want to make it better. it's not really the players' responsibility to do that. I mean, the players are going out there. They're training every day. They're trying to hit 30 home runs. They're trying to win 20 games. They're doing what they can, but they don't control the means of operation. It's absolutely the owners who do that. So even that, I'm not even sure that's the commissioner, to be honest with you. I think that every team needs to look themselves in the mirror and say, how can we get better? Maybe I should renovate my stadium. Maybe I should try something that other teams haven't tried. But it's a competition. You know, you're competing against everything from staying at home to bowling to dinner to just not being involved in baseball. And I think that that matters. And you have to treat it as such, you know, rather than grasping around for, oh, it's because there's too many throws over to first base or whatever. Not really. I mean, just make the product more interesting the same way you would if you owned a movie theater or a roller rink or whatever.
Lots of talk about two great young players on the scene. Juan Soto, one of them, Gleyber Torres, another. We already began the season with Ozzie Albies and Ronald Acuna, and so many players just hitting the ground running right at the top of everything. What's meaningful about that? What does it say about teams' willingness to promote and how good guys can be and how it changes the definitions of what we used to believe was of readiness?
Granting that we've seen a little bit of a pullback at the major league level in home run rate, but the bottom line is that it's easier to hit for power in the big leagues than it is at the highest levels of the minors, which is crazy because you're dealing with tougher competition. Max Scherzer might face you. Noah Syndergaard might face you. But if you connect, you're going to hit the ball further, and that changes the equation. Juan Soto is a very good prospect. Would he be hitting bombs at this rate right out of the gate at age 19, if not for the baseball? I don't know. One of them was a wall scraper the other day. Probably doesn't go out in Double A or Triple A. This is a real difference. You see guys who have good skill sets. You know, good. Austin Meadows is an example. The Pirates outfield prospect. So he's in the minors and he's hitting for average, good on base. And you're like, all right, he's Christian Yelich light. And he comes up and he mashes. And all of a sudden he looks like a big power hitter. Albies didn't have this kind of power profile. He was a speed and defense guy. And I might hit 30 bombs. There is absolutely something different going on in the big leagues, and you cannot evaluate prospects the same way. If you have a guy who has four tools, and the only tool that he doesn't seem to possess is power, that guy might be a five-tool player at the big leagues because the ball is juice. It's still juice. It might be a little less juice, but it's still juice. That changes everything. And yes, if teams see a guy who's good at almost everything except hitting for a ton of power, I think you call the guy up because he could suddenly improve because that's the nature of the game today.
Jonah, the Orioles did not lose yesterday, and that's because they didn't play. Three against Boston they lost, four against Toronto they lost. Each day that goes by, I wonder more and more and more if they grasp the situation that they're in. Is this even going to happen? Is he Machado? This, and it's not just Machado. It's Brad Brock. It's Zach Britton. They have pieces.
You're losing sleep over this, Connor.
And there's time. You have to make. Sorry, I'll calm myself down. What in the hell are the Orioles doing with their time?
So I think we talked about it before.
Oh, I think we have. Yeah, it's my thing.
Before, Connor, and I get you. I get what you're saying. So there's a few factors going on. Number one is the tug of war between buyers and sellers. That if you are a potential seller and it's May and somebody approaches you, you'll say, wow, it's May. You really want me to give up on the season so early? Okay, you give me five Vladimir Guerrero Juniors and we'll give you 4 months of Manny Machado. And the other team says, well, you are crazy, dude. We'll see you later. And then the draft happens and everybody focuses their resources on the draft and everybody's got to talk about the draft and most draftees are going to fail anyway, but we make a big deal about it because we do in the NFL and the NBA, even though baseball has a high, high fail rate. Okay. And then the draft is over and then teams start saying, all right, let's start preparing. And you go back out there and it's June 6th and other teams say, dude, it's still too early. We're still not giving you Manny Machado because it's almost 4 months and we want four Vladimir Guerrero Juniors. And so there's this tug of war and teams are stubborn. And you get down to it, and finally, it's just a matter of time. You know, you get to late July, and it's, well, gee, the buyers are getting more desperate, but so are the sellers. Something has to give, and you reach a deal. That's what impresses me about, let's say, Jerry DePoto going out and making deals, saying, all right, Coleman, Stan, they're not superstars, but we need help now. We're going to do it. The Tampa Bay Rays are cheap buggers. Cool. All right, let's get a relief pitcher for free because they just want to dump Stan's contract on us. And by the way, Stan's a decent player. You know, if teams really want to try to goose it a little bit and they don't want to give up four or five Vladimir Guerrero Juniors, think creatively. Take on money.
All roads lead back to Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Notice that, too. I'm making fun of Connor's obsession here, and you got your own.
I have a neck tattoo of Vladimir Guerrero Jr. this is what you got to do. You just got to figure out a way to entice the other team. It is just like anything else in business. It's not just you have to make a deal. You have to figure out how to sweeten the pot for the other guy. and that can be the way to do it. It could be taking on salary, whatever, because traditionally in this industry, we go down to the wire before deals happen. So just like changing the ballpark equation, getting fans out of the stadium, if something has been done one way and it's not working, try another way.
All right, philosophical stick in the mud aside, I will put aside that role for a moment. Do we know any more about where Manny Machado is going at this point? Do we have a trade market that's actually going to develop in your mind?
So I just wrote about Josh Donaldson for Sportsnet.ca. I do some work over there.
Right.
Canada, ESPN, I guess, or whatever you want to say. And they, when I talked about there, it's a similar thing, right? Donaldson is Machado light, I guess. He's injured. He's not playing as well this season. But I went through the list of suitors, and a lot of these good teams have really good third basemen and or guys that they've committed to, right? So, you know, Cleveland, okay, they have Ramirez. And you look at Boston, and Devers hasn't been great, but you're committed to the guy. And Miguel Andujar has been pretty good for the Yankees. And you sort of go down the list there, Alex Bregman for Houston. You can DH, you know, Machado too, or you could move another guy to DH, or you could play Machado at shortstop. There are options, but you have to think about what the best fits are. And you start to get down to it, and it's like, you know, there aren't that many teams, actually, that, you know, one of them could be the Braves or Phillies if they really want to jump the gun, if they want to invest, if they want to say, you know what, yeah, we rebuilt and we want to take it slow, but gee, we're the Braves and we can win the division right now in Bryce Harper's walk year and you know, screw those guys and we're going for it. You could do something like that. So it becomes really interesting to see which of these teams blink because, again, a lot of these teams have really good left sides of the infield, so you have to be creative and whatnot. Now, Machado's so good that maybe you move your all-star. If you were the Cubs, maybe you move Chris Bryant to right field. You say, okay, it doesn't matter. We're going to get Manny Machado. Jason Hayward's not good or not that good anyway. We're going to make a move. Whatever. But there is a diminished return there because you're moving out a pretty good player to the bench and you're moving another guy to position. So it's not as big a trade market as you would think. And, you know, you could argue that some of those teams reside in the NL Central that, you know, the Brewers at shortstop could certainly use a guy like Machado because Arcia hasn't panned out. And the Cardinals have their own issues at the left side of the infield. So it starts to get interesting, especially if you're a Cubs fan. Could one of your rivals pursue somebody of that ilk? It's certainly possible.
Who wants Jose Abreu?
He's good, right? But okay,
I know that. I asked who wants him.
Yeah, right. Well, okay, so not the Cubs because they have Rizzo. You know, maybe the Dodgers if they're not satisfied with Max Muncy, I guess. Not
he's been awesome, though. Max Muncy's awesome. Been a thing.
Max Muncy's been really, really, really good. Diamondbacks have Goldschmidt? No. You know, you go down the list. Freddie Freeman's a beast. I love Freddie
Freeman.
He's awesome. Yeah, so it's just a matter of supply and demand. Now, in the AL, it's more open because there are a bunch of lousy DHs out there and whatnot, but it's just one of those things that because the team's in contention, it's so stratified, Major League Baseball now. You have super teams, and you have rebuilders. There's only a few, you know, Blue Jays types who are trying to go down the middle. The Mets are sort of like that, too, although they've really been horrible lately, that, you know, are like that. And so it gets to the point where, oh, you call up the team in contention. Well, that team in contention is Houston. And Houston's going to win 105 games, and they're loaded at every position anyway. And it gets tricky. You just don't have a lot of 87-ish win teams that want to make themselves better. So with the trade market for Abreu or even a guy like Machado, it doesn't mean trades aren't going to happen. It just means that the asking price might not be as high because you don't have nine teams lining up. You might have two or three.
Jonah, always outstanding stuff. Have a wonderful weekend.
Thanks, guys. You too.
That is Jonah Carey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.